This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 7th of June 2019. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. Now, we'll begin with the regular notices, and the first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And as you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all lowercase, no spaces. www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first. And so let's take a look at this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
And we welcome John Parvin.
Hello.
Who is sitting in for Richard Martin, who is sunning himself on holiday. Unfair. And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Moving on to the news, here are the headlines. Climate emergency declared by council. City Council adds voice to the Allain House concerns. And reward in hunt for man with city links. Now, Claire, let's have the first headline story, please.
Climate emergency declared by council. Winchester civic chiefs have declared a climate emergency following a meeting of cabinet members. As a result, the Liberal Democrat administration has announced targets of making Winchester City Council carbon neutral by 2024 and achieving the same with the wider district by 2030. The levels of harmful emissions in the city currently exceed national standards, although the council's carbon footprint has reduced by 31% in the last decade, while the district's footprint has reduced by 26% since 2005. The decision follows a declaration by the government last month and means the City Council is among more than 70 authorities across the country to make the move. It also comes just months after the City and County Council approved the City of Winchester Movement Strategy, which sets out an agreed vision and long-term priorities for the transport improvements in the city over the next 20 to 30 years. These include increasing capacity for park and ride services, giving buses priority over cars in several areas, consolidating parking in larger out-of-city centre car parks, enhancing cycling and pedestrian routes, and changing parts of the one-way system. The movement strategy was developed and approved under the previous Conservative administration. Following the decision, Council Leader Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "The science is clear that climate change is real and it is something that we all have a responsibility in tackling. This is an issue that affects everyone and time is running out to avert a global catastrophe. That's why we are setting ambitious targets to make the council and wider district carbon neutral. By doing this, we will also be speaking to partners and agencies in the district and also lobbying government to provide additional powers and resources to help us." Among the members of the public at the cabinet meeting were members of the Winchester branch of the international activist group Extinction Rebellion. A spokesman said, "Winchester City Council's declaration of a climate emergency is an important first step in accepting the scale and severity of the challenge before us. It is imperative the Council now makes a comprehensive assessment of its greenhouse gas emissions and identifies ambitious, measurable, science-based reduction targets for the next year, 2 years, 5 years and 10 years, particularly in terms of transport, green energy and housing insulation, where even low-cost measures can result in large emission reductions. Extinction Rebellion is here to collaborate on policy, support the Council and witness the declaration. We are also present to ensure immediate action is taken and measurable targets are set and achieved. We call for the Council to create a citizens' assembly, revitalising and re-energising the democratic conversation. As reported, climate change protests have been taking place in the city in recent months."
City Council adds voice to Alleyne House concerns. Civic chiefs say that they have expressed concerns about plans to reopen ex-offender accommodation in Winchester city centre. It comes after residents voiced their fears of crime and drug dealing returning when Alleyne House in Hyde Street reopens. The move, which was confirmed by the building's new owner, former Hampshire High Sheriff Mark Thistlethwaite, will see two offenders being released from Winchester Prison accommodated there. It will also house a warden and five tenants from Winchester City Council's housing waiting list. It comes nearly 3 years after the previous facility at Alleyne House was closed, although Mr. Thistlethwaite said that the new facility would be managed to stop its crime and disorder returning to the area. Now, Winchester City Council, which was involved in discussions with Mr. Thistlethwaite, has commented on the move for the first time. A spokesman said, "We have expressed our concerns regarding the potential usage of Alleyne House. We are keen to support the local community and the housing provider to ensure appropriate referrals are made into the project." That followed comments from the ward councillor Dominic Hiscock, who had been in contact with residents over the plans. Councillor Hiscock said he needed more details on the plans before he could back it. He added, "We were involved early on. We expressed our concern. I want more detail about how it is to be managed. Residents have heard it all before. I think he needs to talk to the residents. I cannot see how the level of control that is needed is going to be paid for. He has to talk to the residents. Since the plan was first published, revealed by the Chronicle last week, a number of residents have written to express their concerns about what it could mean for the area, as well as not being informed sooner. Marco Petroni of Hyde Street wrote, "As a young couple living in Hyde Street opposite Alleyne House, we want to express our concern about the reopening. We are disappointed that we did not hear about its reopening sooner and feel as residents living so close to the building, we should have known through the council, not local news." As previously reported, Mr. Thistlethwaite defended the plan, saying that when ex-offenders leave Winchester Prison, they have nowhere to go, Surprise, surprise, they re-offend immediately, he said. Years ago, Elaine House worked perfectly well as a bail hostel, he said, but acknowledged things went wrong in the years before it closed when there was not a warden at the facility. Mr. Thistlethwaite added, there will be a full-time warden. We are not talking about the most chaotic individuals. Mr. Thistlethwaite said that he had been working with Winchester City Council for over a year on the project and had been in meetings with a number of parties, including the police and crime commissioner and ward councillors, to take on board concerns. The facility is due to be managed by charity Trinity Winchester, who are yet to comment.
Reward in Hunt for Man with City Links. A £5,000 reward has been offered for information leading to the capture of an escaped prisoner with links to Winchester. Jason Sufi has been linked to a series of aggravated burglaries, including an incident in Wiltshire. He absconded for HMP Spring Hill, an open prison in Buckinghamshire, on February the 20th. The 39-year-old was serving a 9-year sentence for burglary, false imprisonment and robbery. Since his escape, Sufi has been linked to a series of aggravated burglaries and a robbery with grievous bodily harm in Oxfordshire, Kent, Cambridgeshire, Hampshire, Wiltshire and Surrey. Sufi is believed to have links to Winchester, Farnborough and Fleet. In March, Wiltshire Police issued an appeal after Sufi was spotted wielding a knife in Amesbury. He dropped the weapon and ran off. At no point were any officers or members of the public threatened with a knife, a spokesman for the force said. Anyone who sees a man matching this description should not approach him. Now, Crime Stoppers is offering a reward of up to £5,000 for information leading to Sufi's capture. Annabelle Goodenough from the charity said, we are appealing to anybody who may know of Jason Sufi's whereabouts to do the right thing and get in contact with us. She added, he has shown he can be violent. We should all be able to live in our homes and walk our streets safely without fear, which is why our charity has put up this reward. Please help us to keep our streets safe. If you have any information, however insignificant it may appear, please do the right thing and contact us. In over 30 years, we have always kept our promise of 100% anonymity to everyone who trusts us with their crime information. Sufi is described as 5'6" tall, with olive skin, dark hair and a medium build. People are asked not to approach him. Anyone with information should contact Crime Stoppers by calling 0800 555 111.
Thank you all for that, and we're going to go to the death notices now. And the first is Abley, Anne Abley, died in Oxford on the 22nd of May, aged 95 years.
Bailey, Philip Phil Arthur Bailey, ex-SMT planter, died at home on 29th May.
Exall Marjorie Nay Wiggins, widow of the Reverend John Exall, died on 8th of May 2019.
Gillett Alan Gilly Gillett sadly passed away on the 26th of May, aged 55 years.
Locke Susan Jean, previously Simpson, née Willis, Locke, passed away at Countess Mountbatten Hospice on the 22nd of May, aged 68.
Rushbrook, Shirley Rushbrook, passed away peacefully on 26th of May, aged 78.
Thank you very much. And Claire is going to read Christian comment for us this morning, which is contributed by Rosemary Baker. And it's headed, Volunteers Also Benefit from Helping. Over to you, Claire.
Thank you. On Monday, on our return from holiday, my friend took one of our golden retrievers to Southampton General Hospital, where she is a pets as therapy dog. Maybe because we'd been away, there were lots of requests, and then they had five more children in wheelchairs before they were allowed to escape. Yesterday, she visited our local hospice and then the hospital again on today. In the evening, I went to a meeting of the Winchester Soroptimists. This is a branch of a national and international organisation that is concerned with the provision for women and children locally and beyond. This is often done by raising funds and supporting charities, as well as seeking political change as the bedrock to underpin basic services. This week is National Volunteers Week, when we celebrate and give thanks for all our volunteers and the amazing contribution they make to people's lives. Apparently, almost 23 million people in the UK volunteer their time, energy and brain power, not to mention money, for good causes every year. This led me to consider the reasons why people volunteer and what part, if any, religion might play in this. According to the literature, research shows that religion is considered a key predictor of volunteering. Although a complex issue, it seems that the more religious people are, the more likely they are to volunteer. In the Old Testament, in a teaching that applies to Jews, Muslims and Christians, God blesses Abraham so that he can pass on this blessing to all nations. In Christianity, there is further teaching by Jesus, echoed by Paul, that it is more blessed to give than to receive, and also that we should care for our neighbours. In addition to volunteering, research shows that church members also finance the vast majority of initiatives they are involved in. Interestingly, volunteering is increasing, but it's not clear if this is because there is a greater need. Food distribution is the number one activity by churches, followed by work with youth and the elderly. Other activities include debt counselling, parenting skills and marriage guidance. The National Volunteers Week website highlights how good for you it is to volunteer. Obviously, it's very good for the government and our statutory services to be supplemented by volunteers, and very good for the recipients of such help. But it has also been proved to be beneficial both for the health and happiness of the volunteers. And at a time when loneliness is a significant burden on our health service, it can help build relationships, both for the volunteers with other volunteers, as well as with the people they are helping. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you, Claire. We are moving on now to letters to the editor. And again this week, there's a huge pile of letters in the editor's bag, and we've selected 12. And we think they are the best. John, would you start us off with the first, please?
Yes, it says, issue will return. Sir, I write urging the residents of Hyde to support Professor Nigel Wood in his call to rally in objecting to the proposals to reopen Allain House as a probation hostel. I can confirm all he says about it. When it was previously operating as a hostel for ex-offenders, the area suffered greatly from antisocial behaviour and drug dealing. The occupants openly liaised with the residents of the homeless hostel Westview House, just across the road. This is now operated by A2 Dominion, and I might add, still causes aggravation and stress to the area. All the precautions and controls that are promised do not work, as the rules of the house might prohibit drug and drink on the premises, but this just exacerbates the use outside, i.e. within the Hyde area. We have to suffer gatherings of drug users, rough sleepers and drunks, etc., not only from the occupants of the premises, but friends and visitors to the hostels. This is outside of the control of hostel operators. I have for many years witnessed drug dealing in the Hyde Memorial Garden, and I know the residents that back onto St. Bartholomew's Church constantly witness it as well. I have lived in Hyde for over 40 years, and before the existence of Elaine House and Westview House, this was never the case. We constantly report this to the police, but they seem powerless to improve the situation, and the thought of bringing Elaine House back into use is intolerable. And this was written by Pauline Moore, King Alfred Place, Hyde.
This letter is called Share the Burden. I have been a resident of Hyde Close for 10 years and have experienced what it was like when the hostel was open in the past. Some residents could be noisy and troublesome, leaving litter, sitting on people's walls late at night, shouting and swearing down the street, clearly high on either drugs or alcohol. There were brawls, arguments, accompanied by highly abusive language towards women, by the way. Damage to cars. My own had its roof slashed. Often teenagers would cluster outside the door and windows, calling to residents inside to attract their attention, and I wondered what their relationship with older tenants might be. Who was overseeing this project? Where were the staff and wardens? Who was in charge? Allen House was ill-managed and disruptive to the neighbourhood. In this area, just over the road, we already have a hostel for the homeless, West View. While we certainly need accommodation like this, its location on a thoroughfare for dog walkers and parents with school children going to and from school and to the park is less than ideal. There is often shouting, bad language, arguing, and, in the last months, quite clearly a raised level of drug dealing around Hyde Gate. I myself have walked past people loitering and sharing drugs, and I don't mean smoking cannabis. Another hostel within such a short distance seems excessive in this residential area and unfair on residents who have not been informed, let alone consulted, on the development. Being on the corner of our street, one cannot avoid passing Allen House, and, because of the narrowness of the street, that end of the road, one cannot even give it a wide berth. In the dark, it could feel quite intimidating turning off Hyde Street into Hyde Close, especially given the poor lighting. With all the other development in this area, new housing on Victoria Road, the future development of Station Approach, the student buildings on Andover Road, many of us feel we already have our fair share to manage. To foist a hostel on top of all this seems excessive. This letter was from Dr. L. Forrest of Hyde Close.
This letter is headed, "It Will Get Worse." Living in sheltered housing in close proximity of Westview, yards away from Allen House, I view with dismay this high-handed assumption that this is the place to rehabilitate ex-prisoners. For many years, we have drawn attention to the problems caused by drugs, sleeping rough, and antisocial behaviour in this area. It is not just the inmates, it is the friends that are a major part of this. They hang about outside, cars arrive to collect, distribute drugs, ambulances, fire engines, police come and go, blocking the street, causing apprehension and division. They disregard the rules for community living. The various departments, councillors and Westview itself are all aware of these problems and do their best to keep this under control. But back it comes, and now Allen House would exacerbate these problems. There appears to have been no consultation at the ground level and has only addressed by those not directly involved in this daily battle. At this moment, the tide of druggies and rough sleepers in this area have been pushed back to Saxon Road and Hyde Abbey Garden, where they are having to cut back the hedges to deter the needle exchange and gathered groups. St. Bartholomew's Church became the site for drug exchange inside the church and vandalism outside. They have now had to lock the doors. Allain House did not work in 2016. Putting in a warden will make little difference. Gillian Gutteridge, Hydegate, Hyde.
Slight change of subject. Hopes of action on climate change. Sir, Roger Mallin is right to draw attention to the attitude of politicians and the indifference of much of the public to the climate protests by young people. We can only hope that the new regime at Hampshire County Council will put behind it the smiling condescension of former council leader Roy Perry and move into the modern world where environmental limits are recognised. Jock MacDonald draws hope from an agreement between the leading parties to take forward the Lib Dem motion to declare a climate emergency. Let us hope that this optimism is justified and that such a declaration, if it is made, will substantially bind itself to a programme of real action and urgent implementation. Meanwhile, the state is reacting to the new environmental awareness in its instinctive manner by seeking to prosecute all those arrested in the London protests. If effective protest is necessarily disruptive of other public activity, protesters are likely to acknowledge that there might be a price to pay. But we are still a society that thinks it appropriate to criminalise such peaceful protest. After all, Prime Ministerial hopeful Michael Gove has systematically resisted doing anything about the air pollution that is killing 40,000 people a year. Our own MP, Steve Brine, has supported massive road capacity expansion in this region, though he knows the cost to the planet of such recklessness. This letter was from Chris Gillam, Winchester Friends of the Earth, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Another change of subject, this one entitled Plan for Planning. Your editorial, May the 20th, Retrospective Plans, Time for Reform, is timely and welcome. It refers to the need to boost confidence in the planning system, and as such reflects the wishes of many, both locally and nationally. Increasingly, this is being seen as a national problem. Recently, the Rainsford Review for the Town and Country Planning Association stated, "We ignore at our peril the anger and disaffection felt by so many communities at the failure of council planning policies and procedures to listen to their concerns and respond to their needs." While the National Audit Office's report on planning for new homes states, "The government's planning system is underperforming and cannot demonstrate that it is meeting housing demand." To many, the system is seen to be like winning the lottery for landowners and developers. As someone who has worked at a neighbourhood level in areas of multi-deprivation, mostly in London, and by working with the community and designers, I have seen the transformation on one such area that is now noted for its impact on health, well-being, the economy and child friendliness. I am fully aware of what people want for their towns and cities. Winchester is no different, as many years of knocking on doors has made clear. This has also been demonstrated by the Winchester Deserves Better campaign, and will be further demonstrated when Councillor Mike Krask, one of the new Liberal Democrat councillors, presents a petition calling for better planning at the local level, signed by more than 300 people. There is no doubt that people want better planning, but the system is not structured to deliver it. The planners in local authorities generally do not plan. They control development, prepare policies and identify land for different uses, but no one has responsibility for ensuring that the streets, buildings, green and open spaces work well together. European towns and cities have been shaped over many years by urbanists. We have no equivalent. Urban designers are the closest, but their role in councils tends to be modest. Let us hope that, together with your editorial comment and much local interest, we can further discuss and work for development in Winchester that better reflects the wishes of those who live, work and visit this lovely place. This from Councillor Liz Hutchison of Clifton Road.
This letter is headed Immediate Threat. Sir, in an increasingly unstable world, nuclear weapons proliferation is potentially the most immediate threat to our planet. There are still enough nuclear bombs to produce 280,000 Hiroshima-sized explosions. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eleanor Bell, has agreed to represent Winchester in the Global Mayors for Peace Network, which embraces more than 7,668 cities and councils from 163 countries, including 81 in the UK. The organisation was established by the mayors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and holds special consultative status with the United Nations. Winchester joined Mayors for Peace will be a powerful symbol of hope and optimism. In order to achieve this, we have until June the 11th to gather 500 signatures to a petition to debate this resolution at Winchester City Council's June meeting. Please sign the petition here. petitions.web-labs.co.uk/winchester/public/petition-calling-for-mayor-of-winchester-join-mayors-for-peace. Paul Williams, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
At last, good news for all. Sir, the Winchester University lecturers' strike action has been called off, which is essentially good news for all concerned. Strike action tends to be a last resort, but as with all disputes, a solution is always found following constructive engagement with all parties involved. The message is clear. To avoid disruptive action on either side, sit down together and talk through the options, explaining the challenges faced by the university and agree on a mutually appropriate agreement, preferably before preemptive action is planned. Working with each other to reach a positive solution is paramount. There are no winners as all parties have to essentially move forward without any remaining animosity and look to the future. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
On a much lighter subject, this one is entitled Know Your Onions. Our speech is littered with odd expressions. Why do we say it's raining cats and dogs when there is a heavy shower? Who put the cat amongst the pigeons? Or called the dog a bad name? I was brought up in Lancashire, and we certainly had our share of such terms. When a young man proposed to his girlfriend, he told everyone, "I can't wait to get my feet under her table," which was a compliment, for it meant that he knew she was a good cook and hot meals were necessary in the cold and sometimes frozen north. When I was a child and asked too many questions, my grandmother told me to stop mithering and usually added, "That's obnails for meddlers," which meant I was to mind my own business. When I moved south and married my Hampshire husband, we had a few misunderstandings. I was astonished when he said he was going to set light to the couch. I liked our new furniture. I thought he did too. He was actually going to burn the weedy couch grass in the garden, but many local folk pronounced the word couch. I also learned that if someone felt a little unwell, they said they felt rough. I never understood the phrase, "They think they're the bee's knees." I wonder, Is this a form of envy or jealousy? And who are they, anyway? This from Daphne Smith, The Pastures in Cheriton.
On a more sober line, this is headed Coalition Policy. I am less bothered about cognitive impairment, where the Lib Dems are concerned, than their apparent collective amnesia. They've conveniently forgotten that it was their support for Conservative austerity policies which created the conditions for the Brexit vote in the first place. It may suit them now to present themselves as the party which will save the nation, but in the event of a future hung parliament, there is no guarantee that the Lib Dem leadership contenders, both of whom served in the coalition, would not do so again. I was a party member from 2007 to 2010 and resigned when Nick Clegg joined David Cameron in coalition. I was amazed at the speed with which policies on which we'd campaigned were jettisoned in return for seats at the top table. Quite apart from the oft-quoted reneging on the commitment to end tuition fees and privatisation of the Royal Mail, the Lib Dems in coalition enabled the disastrous Health and Social Care Act 2012, which has facilitated the increasing privatisation of the NHS by allowing private contractors to make huge profits from supplying essential services. This legislation has paved the way for access to the NHS market to be included in any future trade deals, whether as part of the EU in Trade and Investment Partnerships, TTIP, or in a post-Brexit unilateral agreement with the US. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
Well, thank you all for that. That really was a mixed bag. It was very interesting. So we move on now to Your Say, where the Hampshire Chronicle's roving reporter stops a few people in the street to ask their opinion on certain subjects. This week it is climate change activists who threaten to fly drones over Heathrow Airport unless the government cancels plans for expanding the airport. And here's what a few people of the public thought. Peter, can you give us their views, please?
Certainly, Ros, thank you. Jeanette Miles, 52, hosts hotel receptionist of Fairfield Road Full Flood, said, I don't agree with that. Why fly drones and put other people at risk of danger? There are better ways. Jordan Woodley, 23, a software developer of Nightingale Avenue Eastleigh, said, I believe in the cause, but that's not the right way. People might be put off the cause by seeing that. Rod Youngman, 77, retired of Cromwell Road in Stanmore, said, I'm all for taking action against climate change, but not like that. It disrupts innocent people and disturbs everyday life. Finally, Jamie Skioch, 39, PE teacher of Kingsworthy, said, well, they've got a point to make, and climate change is only getting worse. But this is too far. Some people are doing good things.
Well, do you have any particular views on that?
Yes, I'm going to read something later on about drones, and it seems that drones are going to be playing an increasing part of our lives. But anyone who does this ridiculous thing about putting them near airports is completely irresponsible and deserves the book throwing at them.
It does, I entirely agree. We've had one episode of it, and it's held up the world in terms of travel, apart from the danger.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyone got something to say? No, it's just me and him. But it is quite extraordinary. So, moving on from that, me, and I have to say that if you've got an opinion on this subject and you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, then you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That number again, 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Upper Brook Street, SO23 8AL. And you could even drop in when you're in Winchester. We're moving on now to editorial comment. And the big item this week seems to be about Elaine House, and we've heard a lot about that in the paper and in the letters. The editor says, fears are fuelled by lack of communication. While the actual impact of reopening Elaine House is up for debate, one thing is clear. There has been a serious breakdown in communication, fuelling fears in the Hyde community. A number of parties have been privy to this information for some time, and ward councillors and Winchester City Council were involved in discussions with former Hampshire High Sheriff Mark Thistlethwaite. One side says concerns were raised, the other says concern had been addressed. But clearly, someone forgot to tell the people who would be most affected by those residents living in the streets neighbouring Elaine House. As the building currently has the necessary planning permission from the last time it was in operation, there has not been a need for a formal consultation. Perhaps if one had taken place anyway, perhaps this breakdown in the community could have been avoided. It should be noted that only 2 of the 7 homes rooms will go to ex-offenders, who will need a leg up if they are returned successfully to society. And we have next first person from the Hampshire Chronicle. George Hayter contributes. He talks about his battle to fit in with society. And that one's for you, please, John.
Sometimes it's hard to make friends. And it doesn't get any easier if you move away from the friends that you do have. That can make you quite isolated, because often you need a friend to introduce you to more friends. Without that first friend, you can end up rather lonely. This is what my wife and I found when we first moved from Hampshire to the European country we have adopted as our home for 6 months. Don't get me wrong, from the day we arrived in the Netherlands, we have had fun. It's an attractive country with cheerful people who are efficient and liberal. Everything works, and everywhere there are tidy parks, beautiful architecture, pretty canals, and good public transport. We've settled in Amsterdam, where the population is younger than the rest of the country and more cosmopolitan. Central Amsterdam offers the luxury of countless museums, cafes, and curious little shops. Air pollution seems low. The city centre has few motor vehicles. But Amsterdam is not perfect. Take the pavements. They're laughably narrow and often congested. It's tempting to overtake dawdling pedestrians by stepping into the roadway, but that risks injury from a silent speeding danger. There are more bikes in Amsterdam than there are people. Many hurrying cyclists carry dogs or children in a box above the front wheel. These perilous boxes can be wood or metal with sharp corners. Before we left the Winchester area, my wife and I did wonder how we'd make new friends. At first, we were encouraged. It was surprisingly easy to meet Dutch people in the cosy bar 100 metres along the canal from our flat. Most educated Dutch impressed with fluid English, but after a chat and a few laughs with these friendly customers, we never see them again. Amsterdam is a big city. They already have friends, Dutch friends, with whom they have more in common. Neither my wife nor I are seeking employment in the Netherlands. That may be putting us at a disadvantage. Also, it might help if our son and daughter were still children. We have figured out that most of our friends in the past have been either work colleagues or parents we have met through our children's schools. Without jobs or some other membership here, friendship is bound to be harder to achieve. So we enrolled in an internet meetup scheme. It's been good. Now we have several acquaintances through a group of foreign residents of Amsterdam who meet for walks and other outings. We've gone further, starting up our own meetup group through the web. and we seem to have a handful of regulars. Although things are looking up socially, we're sad that none of our new pals are Dutch. Months ago, we enrolled in Dutch conversation classes for immigrants, but found the other half dozen pupils too advanced for us beginners to catch up. We invited one of the other students, who was British, to meet us socially, but he turned us down. Another classmate was a grandmother from Afghanistan. She was assisted in class by her son, who was also an immigrant but had achieved fluency. He told us that his mum was on the course because she had to pass a spoken Dutch to avoid being sent back to Afghanistan. The poor old woman was struggling. Like us, she found Dutch difficult. Recently, the Netherlands has made the test harder in response to success of the Poles' right-wing politician Geert Wilders, who wants to keep Muslims out. Mainstream UK politicians demand that immigrants integrate by making friends and learning the national language. Now, I can appreciate the difficulty of both, particularly for older immigrants without a job, because all our new friends in the Netherlands are American, British or German. I sympathise with immigrants finding it hard to become part of British society.
And we have George Hollingbury contributing for the Westminster Diary. And he writes, good news and not Brexit. Peter,
thank
please.
Thank you, Roz. Before I became an MP and then a minister, I was a businessman, and I haven't lost my deep interest in how entrepreneurs change their communities, their countries, or even the world. A great deal of this hugely important work, often in partnership with government, continues to be drowned out by Brexit noise, but it shouldn't be. Just think for a moment about the challenges of managing countless drones above our heads in the years to come, and how these vehicles, which will be used to deliver your Amazon or UPS parcel, or even your medicines, will be managed so they don't interfere with other traffic or your privacy. Well, I received some understanding of these challenges on a recent visit to a business in Leon Solent called Consortic. This is a leading company in drone training and unmanned technology management. It is also part of the development in the wider Solent area of what is called an unmanned traffic management brackets UTM system called Project Nightingale. This will eventually encompass not only drones, but also automated maritime and land vehicles, and is an opportunity to develop a standardised and effective system to manage how this technology moves and is deployed. Initial applications include drones transferring drugs and samples between Solent NHS hospitals, for example, but it's intended to grow in complexity as more vehicles, both on land, sea and in the air, start to come online. It could be the next big commercial technology jump, and recent research by PricewaterhouseCoopers estimates the drone industry could be worth £42 billion to the UK economy by 2030, with more than 76,000 drones in use. By then, I suspect, drones and other automated vehicles will be a perfectly normal sight. But the important issue to highlight here is the Solent area, including the Meon Valley, is a big part of it through the supply chain, through academia, through the public services involved, and through the innovation we have on our doorsteps. The intention is the Solent UTM will form the basis of a UK-wide UTM. And that's some achievement. There is much to do to see this all to reality, such as better drone technology, enhanced software, but also regulation from the Civil Aviation Authority, plus understanding and meeting concerns about noise pollution, privacy and data protection. But all this is coming to the airspace above our heads in some form, and the opportunities are endless, from law enforcement, traffic management and medical help, to the ever-popular online delivery, all automated and regulated. The UK is presently a world leader in this technology, and government is working with industry to harness the opportunities through a research and development project on how the UK's commercial satellite industry can work with their future UTM concepts, for example. This is good news. It has nothing to do with Brexit, and I'm pleased I have been able to tell you about it.
And so are we. Thank you very much. All right, for the next one, it's Belgara, and it's Alsford Journey makes headlines over fare price. Tell us all about it. Claire.
Here we go. Part of a Winchester District bus route has been branded the most expensive in England. The number 64 from the city to Alton via Alsford includes the stretch from the city centre to Matterley Farm near Tichborne. A national newspaper reported the journey is a little over 4 miles and takes only 8 minutes. Excuse me. The price of a normal daytime single is £5.65, more than a pound a mile, and about 70p per minute of travel. A return is £7.30, says The Guardian. School children who need to catch the bus to Winchester have to walk up the lanes or across the fields to get to and from the stop. On their return, they have to dodge 4 lanes of traffic from the bus stop to reach the village side of the road. One woman drives her car to a lay-by near the stop, leaves it there, and then travels into the city on the 64. Most people said they had given up on the idea of catching the bus. The buses do come up at parish council meetings, Robert Rames, the chairman of the parish council, told the paper. People do need the bus. It's a lifeline for some. According to the villagers, the last time there was a regular bus service through the village was a decade ago, and it came only once a week. It would be nice if there was a 10-seater hopper, something like that, said Mr. Rames. Ray White, who speaks on behalf of the South Hampshire Bus Users Group, was not surprised at the prices people in Tichborne have to pay, or the difficulty they have getting to the bus stop. We feel fares are prohibitively expensive, he said. This is particularly true of countryside travel on the cross-county routes. Stagecoach defends its fares for Winchester to Matterley Farm. A spokesperson said it was in a rural area outside the city boundaries and fell into the next fare stage. The reality is that boundaries between zones have to be set somewhere, the spokesperson said.
Thank you, Claire. And we have historical items now, with the new usual mini news clips, and it's starting with 200 years ago on Monday, June the 7th, 1819. The first item I've got here. Yesterday, our venerable and afflicted monarch entered the 82nd year of his age, which was celebrated here by the ringing of the cathedral bells during intervals of the day. And the next item. Accounts from Spain say that a peasant has been found in a field near Vitoria with a very valuable diamond. There is reason to believe it belonged to Joseph Buonaparte, who lost all riches and valuable effects in consequence of the total defeat of the French army near that city.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, June the 7th, 1919. The first item, Empire Day was celebrated at the school on Monday in last week when, in addition to the school managers, there were present Lord Eversley, Colonel Brian Stewart and Mr. Perry. The proceedings commenced at 10 a.m. with special prayers and the signing of the hymn, O God, Our Help, after which Mr. Perry, Honourable Treasurer to the school managers, briefly addressed the children, reminding them of the reasons for holding the celebrations. And the second item, Demonstrations were given on 3 days last week at Weston, Micheldever, by the new Austin Farm Tractor, a light and high-powered machine of very compact design and great handiness. The demonstrations were attended by a large number of leading agriculturalists of the county and their ploughmen, whose interest in the most modern type of tractor was very manifest. And we understand that, as a result of the demonstrations, quite a number of orders have been given for these Austins.
50 years ago, Saturday, June 7th, 1969, Mr. R. M. Marsh, the county's chief education officer, has been talking to parents on proposals for the reorganisation of secondary education in Winchester and Alresford. He has also been trying to gauge the reaction of parents to the alternatives within the comprehensive system before the Education Committee and the County Council make their final decision in July as to which system to adopt. The series of talks was due to have finished at Peter Simmons School last evening, but owing to the heavy demand, a further meeting has been arranged at the County High School for Girls on Monday evening. Reviewing the development of an educational system on comprehensive lines, Mr. Marsh said that the County Council, in their deliberation of choice of the system in the Winchester area, had considered proposals based on all through 11 to 18 school, or one taking children at 11 until 16, when they would be transferred to a post-fifth year comprehensive college. Next item. A racehorse faced the biggest hurdle of its career on Tuesday morning when its horse box screeched to a halt in City Road, Winchester, with its front wheels on fire. And this setback proved to be an ill omen. The six-year-old steeplechaser, Drumdew, was being transported from the Cloud Stud at East Noyall near Salisbury to Plumpton Racecourse, where it was due to run in the 5 o'clock race. City firemen quickly dealt with the blaze, and after that it was a matter of waiting for a replacement vehicle to arrive. The trainer, Mr. W.J.M. Davis, was anxious but confident. He commented, "It's a good horse. If we can get it to Plumpton, it will finish in the first three." The jockey, Mr. D. Ellsworth, was also in good heart.
Yes. 25 years ago, Friday, June 3rd, 1994. Winchester shoppers will not use the park and ride, and the scheme could be the kiss of death for independent traders in the city. These claims were made at a meeting of business people who run small privately owned shops in Winchester. The traders are so fed up with traffic experiments, declining trade, high business rates and problems with vagrants that they are determined to form a pressure group to influence decisions made by Winchester City Council and other bodies. Around 60 traders, representing some 38 businesses, met on Tuesday at the Royal Hotel. The meeting was called after traders at Woodruff's, China Box and Design House decided they needed more say on the city's future. Traffic congestion was debated at length, but although most agreed something needed to be done to improve parking and traffic flow, many felt park and ride was not the answer. "People come into my shop and say they will not use park and ride," said jeweller Jeremy France. Woodruff's customers, the meeting heard, had made similar comments. She said people perceived Winchester as an awkward place to visit by car, and many went to Alresford and Stockbridge instead. "Park and ride is going to be the absolute kiss of death," she added. Second section. The King Charles Public House at Kingsworthy enjoyed an influx of new patrons when local residents met with new owners George Gale and Company. Plans by the brewery to redevelop the King Charles, historically a quiet local, have left people concerned with the potential impact of the development. The meeting was called by the residents of nearby King's Close and attended by Jeremy Horton, general manager of Horndean Inns, along with their chief surveyor, Roy Scott, who each addressed questions from over 40 villagers. The brewery has plans for 50 car parking spaces, which caused the greatest concern. Questions were raised regarding the noise, screening and sighting, along with the need for 50 spaces. The bulk of the other concerns raised during the two-hour meeting centred around floodlighting of the building and car park and the conservation of existing trees and hedgerows. In a separate application, George Gale and Company is seeking the permission to build a two-storey house in the garden of the King Charles to recoup some of their development costs.
We're moving on now to what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. And I have to say, it's a pretty bleak story. We tried to pick out something really nice and interesting for you, but actually it's all the routine stuff, except I have an item here about Peppa Pig. Now, if you have children or you have grandchildren, this is the very thing for you. It's entitled here, Peppa Pig Tickets on Sale, and it's Peppa Pig's Best Day Ever at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Tickets are already on sale for one of the Theatre Royal's most anticipated shows, set to hit the stage next March. Goodness, they are advertising ahead. Peppa Pig's brand new live show, Peppa Pig's Best Day Ever, sees everyone's favourite pig, her brother George and their parents go on a road trip full of adventure. Castles, caves, dragons, dinosaurs, ice cream and muddy puddles are all in store. This brand new live show, adapted from the British animated children's TV series, was first broadcast in 2004 and is now adored by children around the world. It reunites Peppa with friends and family, including Miss Rabbit, Susie Sheep, Gerald Giraffe, and more. There will be plenty of the fun and games they've become known for, packed with songs, games and laughter. Peppa Pig's Best Day Ever will leave young audiences mesmerised. Well, it's got me as well, so I think your children and grandchildren are in for a lovely show. Peppa's Pig Best Day Ever will be seen at the Theatre Royal on Winchester from March 7th to 8th, 2020. March 7th to 8th, 2020. And tickets are already available to buy from the box office at the Theatre Royal Winchester by calling 01962 840 840. 01962 840 840. Or you call online at Winchester Theatre Royal Winchester.co.uk. That's Winchester Theatre Royal, winchester.co.uk. And Peppa Pig really is very interesting to young people. I've got two granddaughters and they are almost grown into their teens now, but they love it. I can see why. So what else have we got for you? Well, some concerts. On Saturday, June the 15th at 7:15... Taverner Festival Concert, Winchester Cathedral, Matthew Barley Ensemble, The Protecting Veil by the late Sir John Taverner. That's on June the 15th at 7:15. And on Saturday, June the 22nd, Winchester Fusion Choir Charity Concert is at All Saints Church on the Petersfield Road, Highcliffe. That's at 7:30. And my guess is that, although there's no information here, you go straight to the location to book a ticket or you turn up at the gate. So those two look very interesting. Then, finally, there's a charity morning. Charity Home Start Winchester is holding a charity coffee morning at Rickstein's High Street restaurant in Winchester City. That's High Street near the Broadway, I should say. And that's on June the 19th, and it's from 9:30 a.m. Coffee and cake will be served to help boost the charity's work with support families. Well, so it wasn't so bleak after all. Well, we've come to lighting up times, and we're going to start on Saturday the 8th of June, when the sun will set at 9:17 p.m. And then on Wednesday the 12th of June, the sun will rise at 4:50 a.m. and will set at 9:20 p.m. And now we come to the items of general news. And Claire, will you start us off, please?
This article is headed, County May Face a Hosepipe Ban. Hampshire may be facing a hosepipe ban this summer as Southern Water announced plans to spend £800 million on water infrastructure. Southern Water has announced it may apply for a drought permit to help restrict how much water can be taken from key rivers, such as the Test and Itchen, following a drier than usual winter. This comes as Southern Water revealed it is planning on splashing up to £100 million on a scheme in Fawley which can turn seawater into fresh water. The company is aiming to complete the desalination plant by 2025. Nigel Hepworth, Water Resources Policy Manager at Southern Water, said, "We are spending this money to enhance our regional grid so we can import more from neighbouring areas. We will also be spending an extra £2.4 million on new technology and people in the coming year to tackle leaks on top of the £16 million we spent last year." He added, "Preventing water wastage will be a key task for everyone who cares about the county's precious rivers, and we will also be advising customers on how they can be more water efficient to save money and protect the environment. This will be the first new reservoir to be built in the southeast since the 1970s, which looks to encourage wildlife to the area and provide a new community leisure facility for the area. Residents should also expect to see a pipeline spanning from Bournemouth to the west end of Hampshire, which should supply around 220 million litres a day. A further £103 million will be invested into the new Havant Thicket Reservoir and will give approximately 21 million litres a day to Hampshire residents in a supply deal with Portsmouth Water. When asked about how much the pipeline would cost, Southern Water were not able to reveal a figure, as this scheme is still being planned. A Southern Water spokesman said a further £110 million will be spent on the Hampshire grid, which will enhance transfer around our regional network.
They just see me as part of the group. A daredevil Chandlersford grandmother has embarked on an extreme sports extravaganza. Maureen Mew decided to take up BMX biking just before her 70th birthday. After taking her 12-year-old grandson Rufus to practice sessions at Knightwood BMX Club for the last 2 years, she thought she'd give the sport a go. To get a feel for it, Maureen did several BMX exercise sessions with her friend Julie Bancroft, age 48, which are open just for women aged 16 years and older. Celebrating her 70th birthday on April the 15th, she treated herself to her very own bike and joined her grandson's riding club. The grandmother of four has now earned herself the nickname of Nanny Mo from children at Knightwood BMX Club. Maureen said, "I thought, why not get involved? At first, I was not convinced I could do it. I went to some coaching sessions and I loved it, and I plan to take part in club races eventually. I was a bit scared at first, but now I have mastered the track. My husband was worried that I would hurt myself, but I wear a helmet and body armour. I look like a ninja turtle. My grandson thinks it's great and tries to coach me. The other kids at the club think it's wonderful that I do BMXing. I don't think they care about my age and just see me as part of the group." Maureen's daughter, Paula Strickland, said She is superhuman and amazing. She runs 10 kilometres a few days a week. Alongside taking part in extreme sports, Mo volunteers at Chandler's Ford Infant School, Murden Junior School, and helps to run the Sunday School at St Mary's Church in Swathling. As well as volunteering at Southampton Air Cadets, she caddies for her husband Alan on the golf course. She is also grandmother to Polly, 13, who she does 50-mile bike rides with, Stan, aged 9, and Freddie, aged 7. Knightwood BMX in Chandler's Ford runs coaching sessions every Saturday morning and Thursday evening.
Thank you. That's an uber super mum, isn't it?
More sporting achievement, but a slightly higher altitude. This one entitled Climber Nims Breaks Records. A Hampshire man has smashed the world record for climbing 6 of the world's highest mountains in just over 4 weeks. Niamal, brackets Nims Purja, 35, from Eastleigh, has succeeded in the first phase of his goal, which is to speed climb the 14 highest mountains in the world in 7 months. The former soldier was the first Gurkha to join the special boat service and has 3 world records for speed climbing. He had to climb the world's deadliest mountain, Annapurna, nearly 4 times to fix lines and ensure that the narrow window for the summit was hit. A spokesperson for Project Possible said, "We have to wait until the Guinness World Records verify the climbs, but we think there are a number of records that have not only been broken, but smashed. Not least of which is Nim's own record of Everest, Lhotse and Makalu, which stood at 5 days. We believe he has just done it in 48 hours and 30 minutes, having already climbed the world's 10th, 7th and 3rd highest peaks. Some achievement."
Indeed.
Choristers mark 20th anniversary. Winchester Cathedral Girl Choristers, past and present, joined forces last weekend for a special evensong to celebrate their 20th anniversary. The amassed choir included more than 50 girls, both new and old, including several members from the original choir and 18 current girl choristers. Sophie Burford, one of the original girl choristers, said, "It's rare for a 12-year-old girl to have such a life-changing experience at such a young age. The choir changed my life both in the present and for the future. We shared laughter and tears together, and I feel this helped shape us into the women we are." The choir formed in 1998, and every year is made up of 20 girls aged between 12 and 17, all from schools in the Winchester and Hampshire areas. Visitors can hear them singing a weekly Sunday service during term time, at services and concerts at Easter and Christmas, and on tours, recordings and broadcasts.
Council apologises over appalling bin service. Winchester City Council has apologised to residents across the district after receiving a high number of complaints about waste collections. The service provided by Biffa recently caused a backlog of rubbish in a number of areas across Winchester and East Hampshire. The council originally posted an apology on social media, to which one Twitter user replied, "St Paul's Hill, now a month since collection. This is appalling service." A spokesman person for the council has since said the problems were caused by unprecedented difficulties with vehicles and staffing at Biffa. They said, "We apologise sincerely to any of our residents affected by late bin collection. Additional staff, vehicles and other contractors have been brought in to complete all outstanding collections with a view to returning to normal service by the end of the week. Although much of the backlog of collections has now been completed, we are continuing to monitor progress. The Chronicle contacted Biffa, but it is yet to receive a reply."
Proposal submitted to reconstruct City Wall. Plans have been submitted to reconstruct a historic wall in Winchester city centre in a bid to ensure its long-term stability. If approved, the proposal would see part of the wall along North Walls near Marston Gate demolished and reconstructed using the same material. A planning statement submitted by Axford Heritage Planning said, since this demolition is proposed on the grounds that there is a high risk that the wall will topple over at this point, it seems appropriate in principle to take forward the proposed repair. Currently, the wall is leaning over the narrow path that runs along North Walls, raising the possibility that part of the road, a major route for city centre traffic, may need to be closed for the work to take place. A spokesman for Axford Heritage Planning said, the detailed logistics will be worked out by the contractor in liaison with the Highways Authority at the time, but currently there are no plans to close any roads. A decision is due by June the 26th.
Expansion plan revealed as City Hotel opens. Travelodge has revealed plans to complete 17 new hotels this year, including one in Winchester High Street, which is now open for bookings. Planners approved the designs for the new Winchester branch in April last year, with the hotel opening for business this week, despite the ongoing construction work on the retail units below. The go-ahead followed changes to the scheme after criticism from a number of people and organisations, as well as Winchester City Council's urban design officer. The 62-bed hotel has taken over the vacant Next store, which was demolished before construction work began on the new hotel. Commenting on the national expansion of the hotel chain, Peter Gowers, Travelodge's chief executive, said, despite the uncertainty facing the UK, the long-term prospects for low-cost hotels remain strong. The next phase of our expansion plan will see it deliver more choice in more places than ever before. We've come a long way from our early days by the side of the motorway, and today's Travelodge not only offers the same great value as always, but the extra choice of our new Travelodge Plus and Super Room concepts, ideal for those who want just that little bit more. He added, Britain's travellers are changing. We expect more and increasingly we travel to a wider range of places. More and more of us are working away from home during the week, and we're taking more long weekends.
Volunteers thanked at a special event. A Winchester charity held a celebratory event to thank its loyal team of volunteers. Dozens gathered in Milner Hall to applaud the team behind Winchester Church's night shelter, which offers a lifeline and first port of call for those in crisis. In 2018, around 10,899 hours were given by volunteers, with their jobs including cleaning the ovens, tidying cupboards, decorating, serving meals and washing up. Manager Michelle Price said the night shelter simply couldn't operate without our fantastic bank of volunteers. We are fortunate to have such dedicated helpers who give up their time to do anything. The event was about putting a spotlight on those people and saying thank you. The event took place as part of Volunteers Week, a national initiative to highlight millions of volunteers across the UK. The group were treated to homemade cakes served by the night shelter's catering team. A number of volunteers spoke about their experiences at the charity. The event was rounded off by a talk from Ben Burfoot, who recently broke the world record for running the London Marathon wearing a sleeping bag, which raised over £3,000 for the night shelter.
And this one is a good result for an increasing problem, entitled Man Fined Over Dumped Rubbish. A Winchester man has been ordered to pay hundreds of pounds after his waste was illegally dumped near King Somborne. James Hart admitted breaching his duty of care when, on two separate occasions, waste which belonged to him was found dumped in December last year after he had arranged for a carrier to take the rubbish away. An investigation by Test Valley Borough Council saw Hart admit the charges after a number of black sacks, cardboard boxes and electrical cables were discovered in Clarendon Way. He was fined £200, made to pay £250 in costs, as well as a £30 victim surcharge at Basingstoke Magistrates Court earlier this month. Environmental Services portfolio holder Councillor Alison Johnston said, "Your waste is your responsibility and ignorance is no excuse. Your responsibility does not end with passing your waste to a collection service. You must check that they are correctly licensed. Wherever possible, we will seek to prosecute with sufficient evidence no matter what is fly-tipped. It is a hugely selfish crime and we will not stand for it. We have a zero-tolerance approach. If anyone has any questions about disposing of their waste, our Environmental Services team is always happy to help on 01264 368 000.
Thank you all very much. And that concludes our extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for you this week. But before we do go, another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 711998. And we want to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. To our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers. So it's goodbye from Claire.
Bye-bye.
John.
Goodbye.
And Peter.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roz. Until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? And it's goodbye from me again. I hope you have a good week and we'll be reading for you in a month's time. Goodbye.